was educated as a social psychologist who lives primarily in London, England. He's worked in couples counseling, worked with people struggling with HIV and AIDS and addictions. He is a prolific author who has written at least 12 books, beginning with quantum theology and including spirituality and catching up with Jesus. He reminds the church that there is a new spirituality emerging in our 21st century. And it's emerging out of our understanding of the universe, which science has revealed. And he stresses the importance of human beings pursuing both our individual, communal, and planetary wholeness. I had the privilege of having lunch with Dharmit when he was lecturing at a Roman Catholic seminary or convent at the FCJ Center in downtown Calgary several years ago, and we offered a two-day lecture. And together he and I discussed the need for the church to be a center of transformation and wholeness and a proponent of spirituality. He is incredible to listen to. He's difficult to read. And although Overview is a member of a religious order, he is not so much about religion as he is about spirituality. And he reminds us that spirituality, as Anne just read, is to be understood as an innate wisdom of the human heart that enlivens a zest for life, a search for meaning and purpose, a love for all that is good and beautiful, a passion to create a better world, a sensitivity to the life energy that we call God, that permeates the entire cosmos. And as someone who has researched and read extensively on science and the universe, he has landed where one of Job's friends has landed, smack dab in the middle of the wonder and awe of the universe. In all of his searching and researching, he has landed at the same place as Job, which is the place where all faith eventually lands, an acceptance that we can't know everything, but we can dwell and choose to live in the wonder and awe of this incredible place and trust in the goodness and benevolence. Our scripture today is taken from the book of Job, the archetypal story of a man struggling for the meaning of his existence. Life was going swimmingly well for Job. He was a very wealthy man, well-to-do. He had 10 wonderful children, a partner. He had hundreds of cattle and sheep. Life was very good. And he had a great faith in the goodness of God. And then he undergoes tremendous suffering. He undergoes incredible chaos, the chaos of loss and devastation, of natural disasters, of fire and a hurricane, of human robbers, and disease. And he ends up losing all 10 of his children, his home, his livestock, and finally his health. And he wonders the proverbial human question, why? It is our question when disaster strikes, when sadness comes upon us. Why has all of this tragedy befallen me? Am I being punished? And he goes through his mind, and he can't recall doing anything that would warrant all of this loss, devastation, and chaos. We have all been where Job has been. We have all questioned. We have all suffered. We have all searched for answers and struggled to find meaning amidst the suffering. And we hear one of Job's friends reminding him that perhaps it is impossible to figure it all out. But his friend asks, can you find out the deep things of God? Can you find out the limit of the Almighty? It is higher than heaven. What can you do? Deeper than Sheol, the land of the dead. What can you know? Its measure is longer than the earth and broader than the sea. 3,000 years after this book of Job is written, we are still questioning and wondering on the mysteries of God. And what we have discovered in our questing is this, according to scientists. The more we learn from scientists, the more we learn of how much we don't know. The more scientists and theologians alike have arrived at the same awe of this marvelous universe of ours. But there are a few truths that are emerging from the world of science and spirituality coming together. And I offer them a couple today. The first is chaos theory. The discovery by scientists that the universe operates on a movement and rhythmic flow moving perpetually between chaos, order and destruction, and order in a rhythmic flow from life and death and rebirth. In classical science, chaos was attributed to randomness, a freak of nature that science might one day understand and then be able to control. From the turbulence of a river to the unpredictability of weather patterns to the fibrillation of the human heart, climate change. But now that chaotic systems are being mathematically modeled, we are discovering hidden patterns of order and beauty embedded in the chaos. And in fact, there is a growing theory that chaos might actually be a precondition or stimulant for activating the self-organizing creativity inherent. In other words, science is teaching us that chaos and destruction are necessary precursors to new life and growth, and they are in the system. Isn't that the metaphorical understanding of the story of Job and the life of Jesus? Yet it's in the midst of chaos and darkness and destruction and death, there will inevitably emerge the possibility and potentiality and fruition of resurrection, new life, and growth. Job experienced both the joy and fulfillment of life, and he experienced chaos and destruction and devastation. And then, at the end of the story, he regains all that he had lost. Adds even some more. So not only theology, but science has given evidence that when we are living in the throes of chaos, whether individually or communally or globally, as most of us are living in now, we need not despair. Eventually, new life and understandings and growth. You and I all seek to live stable and peaceful and happy lives. And when we're in that space, we don't want anything to change. But that's just not how the universe works. There will always be a movement out of stasis into chaos. For everything is in movement and flux, even a rock, which appears immovable and unchanging, is in reality an energetic ball in perpetual motion. Nothing is as it seems. So why try to figure it all out? It's impossible. So perhaps rather than trying to resist change, we need to literally go with the flow, trusting that something new and fruitful and beautiful is eventually going to emerge. Out of every loss, a gift will emerge. That is the hope. I want you to reflect on the times when you have been in chaos, when you've been in struggle or pain. As you emerged from the darkness, what new understandings and insights emerged for you? What have you learned so far about yourself, about others? How have you grown spiritually? What wisdom, what compassion has been gained? The second insight that science offers us today is the interrelatedness of all things. And this leads us to our understanding of how we endure the chaos. By coming together in community. And this is a lesson from science. In 1890, J.J. Thomson succeeded in splitting the atom with hopes of identifying the ultimate building blocks of creation. In pursuing the elementary particles, which we presume to be isolated and independent, scientists continued to split the subatomic particles. So by the early 1960s, scientists had smashed particles down to quarks and leptons and thought they might be on the verge of discovering the final units of matter out of which everything proceeded. But a snag happened. The quarks refused to be isolated. After 5 years of slamming atoms together, scientists discovered that quarks stick together. Any isolation lasted only for a trillionth of a trillionth of a second. The quarks proved to be highly elusive, making sense only in groupings of two or three. Sound familiar? Where two or three are gathered together, there is life in the midst of it, displaying an elegant versatility to manifest their existence. They can exist only in relationship to one another. Rozak in 1999 wrote this: quarks give up their family connections stubbornly and then decay in a micro instant, as if they had no way to survive outside of relationship. The world of science and the study of energy reminds us that everything is created for the purpose of interrelatedness. We cannot exist without the collaboration of one another. Even a quark refuses to be alienated and isolated, but seeks immediate, instant connection with another quark. In O'Murphy's book, The Transformation of Desire, he challenges us to work cooperatively for the right relationships, which, as he says, will facilitate our liberation and growth at every level. Striving to get relationships right is the heart and soul of the new reign of God that Jesus was talking about. And it is not merely human relationships, but right relating at every level of the cosmos to the bacterial realm. Because creation is forever held in the embrace of a relational matrix. And from that foundational source, all relationships find their true place and purpose. The Trinity is a human made concept, but it belies a universal truth that even it is in the very nature of God to be relational, to be three parts in one. It can't be split apart. God can't be split apart. It is the coming together of all of us that creates the whole of God. It is in being relationship with each other, even in times of chaos, especially in times of chaos, that we are grown and mature and become more whole. The more different and diverse we are as a body, the more opportunity for growth there is. It is not in isolation or alienation or disconnection that life is grown, but in interdependency and interrelationship. When we opt out of relationship with one another, we opt out of an opportunity for our own spiritual growth and emotional maturation. Last week, I met with a family that was going through chaos. Only 9 months earlier, we had stood on the beach at Qualicum Beach in front of a home in which they had a beautiful home right on the ocean, Qualicum, on Judges Road. And I had stood there and declared the marriage of a husband and wife entering into their second marriage together. And it was a beautiful day, a small gathering of family and close friends. And then the bride's brother died from cancer. And so I was asked to come again and gather the family together again to heal, to begin that process of healing from the sadness and loss. And so we sat in a circle, and I asked questions about their brother and uncle, and they shared memories and insights, and there were lots of tears and lots of laughter. And out of that pain and that sadness and that devastation and that completion of a life, there was understanding of so much wisdom and a greater love for one another, for him, and for the journey of life was released. In the midst of all that pain, there emerged deeper understandings and a greater love. Out of the chaos and decimation of death, an even greater love, a greater love and compassion was born. It is in collaboration and cooperation, in symbiogenesis, of life coming together for growth, that love is found. And so, science and theology are agreed. It is the purpose of the community of faith to have faith and trust in the movements that we all make individually and together, moving from chaos to order, back into chaos, into order, where love is found. And even more importantly, it is in the accompanying of one another. We gather together when loss and chaos occurs in our lives, for families, for friends, for communities to gather together to support each other as faithfully and collaboratively as bacteria and corpses come together through the inevitable movements from life to death. We do so trusting that we are all held in the womb, in the compassion of the sacred web of life that holds us all together in an everlasting movement and an everlasting goodness.